Welcome to Season 4 of Marcus Oldham Ag Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of agriculture. Stories to challenge your views, expert insights, and the latest thinking that relates to ag. Hosted by David Cornish, we're thrilled to guide you through the dynamic and ever-evolving landscape of agriculture. So buckle up and get ready for another season of Ag Talk. Whether you're a seasoned ag industry pro, a current student, or simply someone who's passionate about agriculture, there's something here for you. Our guests are industry thought leaders, farmers, researchers, and entrepreneurs who are making a difference in the ag world, one innovation at a time. Season 4 of Marcus Oldham Ag Talk's our best one yet, and we can't wait to have you on board. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get ready to explore the wonderful world of agriculture together.
This podcast was recorded in December 2023, and while commodity forecasts have improved somewhat, I believe the underlying messages are still very important in managing a farm business going forward. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did recording it.
It's my pleasure to welcome back John Francis, Director of Agrista Consulting, to the Ag Talk podcast. John and I had a discussion on this podcast about 12 months ago, actually, and that was about leasing versus buying land, and it was a very popular one. But a lot's changed since then, John. So I thought, you know, if we think back on it, at that point, I think for 3 years I'd been saying to my sister, it doesn't get better than this, it doesn't get better than this, it doesn't get better than that. Well, in hindsight, I think I was right. What do you think?
Yes, I think I remember our opening, and I think we talked about how good it was to be in agriculture, and I think they were our exact words. It doesn't get better than this. And I think the worm's turned in agriculture, as it does, and it's shocked me as much as it's shocked a lot of other people. And I've been I've had to reflect on how much we are exposed to agriculture being a commodity business, and that has hurt quite a few people. It certainly hurt me, or my pride, in after I was saying how good it was. Now I'm saying how bad it is, but I think as long as we remember the fundamentals, we will get through this little blip, and hopefully it is just a little blip.
Yeah, and we'll get onto the fundamentals, but I think it's worth, having a little reflection on what drove business performance over the last probably 5 or 6 years. One of them has to be capital appreciation. One of them has to be low interest rates, I would have thought. And then also we've had good performance on farms. So those combination of factors allowed us to do things probably we hadn't done before for a long time. But did it also lull us into a false sense of security, you reckon?
I'm not so sure. I think it was certainly an excellent time for growth because interest rates were so low, commodity prices were so good, and we were getting the capital growth. And I guess provided you had your exit strategy clearly articulated and you knew that, you know, if you hit a certain point that you could get out, and I'm not sure that anyone's actually executed their exit strategy, which suggests that they're not at a point that they need to, then I think you're okay. And I often reflect on this because I guess what I think is, would you have been better off not growing and investing that internally and just looking at the internal growth, or would you have been better off with the growth, accepting that, you know, you might take a bit of pain in terms of interest rates, but still be better off wealth creation-wise having the capital growth? And I think there's the majority of people that I work with have gained more from the growth strategy, which was, you know, expanding the four fences, in the last 10 years, relative to keeping my powder dry and then growing when I've got enough equity. A lot of people went very hard in a short period of time, and now you could say the worm's turned. But if you think about it, if they waited to have that growth, well, they would have left a lot on the table, in my opinion. Does that answer your question, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's a really valid point, because you think about it, in a lot of areas in Australian agriculture, we've had double-digit capital appreciation. Now, if you've had that for 4 or 5 years, that's a significant increase in wealth. Certainly something that you couldn't do through the P&L to the level that we've done. And as you say, we've obviously had low interest rates, which have made us ability to cash flow it. But I suppose what's really interesting now is what you've seen with your clients this year versus last year. What are you seeing is happening to the P&L and balance sheets?
Yeah, so it's a really dynamic time to be in ag. I think the last time we spoke, I talked about how dynamic it was just from those three points that you just raised: interest rates, inflationary sort of stuff, or there was no inflation, and commodity prices and capital growth, so four rather. And now I think they have all turned in a direction which has imposed incredible cash flow pain on businesses. Now, we actually haven't, interestingly, our benchmarking data lags real time. So we've just gone through the 22-23 year, and some interesting things out of that were that the really good producers are still doing very well, but the magnitude of the difference between the average and the top 20% is, in some enterprises, is a sevenfold difference. And that's with prices that were sitting around the 70th percentile. So we hadn't quite had the impact of this price depreciation or commodity price impact. Fast forward to the 23-24 year, which is where we're sitting now, where we have had a further 30% reduction or thereabouts in price, there is some considerable grief in businesses, which really means if they were generating close to zero back in the 22-23 year, or marginally more than zero at an operating level, they're going to be generating a lot less than zero this year. Add to that, the impact of interest rates, and remember that a lot of these people still do have considerable debt because they were, growing their debt in the business to grow their business, then you do have a really challenging cash environment, in my opinion.
And I think that's a really important point, is that we've got to think about when we're building a business or working a business, we have these two components. One is cash, one is wealth. It's sometimes a juggle getting the structure right to build one or make certain the other one that can cash flow it. And we don't know what's going to happen. It's sort of that sort of risk mitigation, but wealth creation that we have to do to remain viable. I mean, it's a real juggle, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it is. And it's a good point you raise, because some people have said to me, well, should I take a rear-facing view, or should I take a historical five-year average when I'm doing these expansion analyses in the past? And I think if you took a rear-facing view over the last 5 years, well, you would never have expanded, because you would have said, well, there's not enough cash in the business to do this, and so I'm not going to do it. Whereas if you took that forward-facing view, then you sort of took a bit of a risk, but so long as you understood the percent or the extent of the potential downside, and you knew how to manage that, or you had the relationship with the financier that you'd explained what you considered to be the risks and how you would manage those, then I think you would have taken that opportunity to expand. Now, a lot of people are in a position now that they've got a reasonable amount of debt. And the other interesting point, I guess, for this is, what's a reasonable amount of debt now was not a reasonable amount of debt only 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, 80% equity 3 years ago, a lot of people would have said, well, you've got a very lazy balance sheet and you should be going harder. Now, my guess is that 80% equity position is inflicting a lot of pain on people, particularly those that are generating, you know, zero returns, of which there are quite a few.
Mm. So here we are. It's and we talk about controlling the controllables, John. We can't, you know, with the interest rates, the prices are the prices. We're in a commodity climate. Weather is weather. Now, we can't control them, but we need to think about how we can manage them. So one of the things I'm really interested about talking to you is when you've been doing this for a couple of years now, when you're looking at what you think are your high-performing businesses, what do they focus on? What's fundamentally different? And you talked about a 7x difference in performance. What's fundamentally different about those farmers that maybe us mere mortals can learn from?
If I start with the fact that I am surmising this, I can tell you about the outputs of their businesses that are different. And that tells me something about the systems that are different. It tells me something about what they do in terms of their operational sort of attack on the business, if you like, for want of a better term. But what it doesn't tell me about is the human side, which I think is basically the difference between those producers that deliver consistently higher profitability relative to the remainder. And I think there's a number of words that you can use to describe them. I think grit is sort of a good one, or resilience, or determination, or motivation. They're all words that sort of come to mind when I think about high profit producers. So the attributes, I think, are this. The first one is that they understand the importance of systems. And I'll talk to what I mean by that. I think systems is probably the most underrated piece of the puzzle in a farm business. When I'm talking about a system, I'm really talking about time of calving, time of lambing, time of turnoff, time of operations. All of those things are absolutely critical to driving a low cost of production. How do they do that? Because they allow for optimizing of feed utilization, which is the key difference between the highest performing producers in terms of profitability relative to the others. The next thing they do is they have a thorough understanding of the productivity measures in their business, and they understand the effect that those productivity measures have on the financial performance of their business. And given we're talking about complex biological systems and complicated systems, that is not easy to do, and it takes a number of years to really understand. I don't think I'm there, and I've been doing nothing else but looking at farm systems for the last, I don't know, 20 years or whatever it is. So they understand that. The next one is they have a desire to be held accountable to the business performance that they deliver. They don't want to shirk it. They don't want to blame the weather. They don't want to blame someone else. They want to take accountability for the bits that they do in the business. They have this attitude towards cost control that is, they spend every dollar as if it's their last dollar, which is a really hard thing to do. And they have a desire to deliver 30% or more returns on every dollar spent. So they have this really, you know, good or disciplined approach to cost control. They understand the importance of operational timeliness. They understand that there's always going to be a compromise, but they have that ability to value the compromise and understand the consequence and the probability and weight a decision based on that. When they do make decisions, they understand the importance of probability and consequence, and they tend to weight their decisions on that. That doesn't mean they're always right, but they tend to do that. Now, none of that is captured in our benchmarking. It's the human element of what I see, and I have absolutely no data to support that other than my observations. But I think it's a really important component that's rarely talked about because we're too focused on talking about the outputs, which I'm happy to talk to now, given that I've talked about that human side. I think there's a few other things around psychology, decision-making, being decisive, building a team culture and understanding the importance of staff and their ability to drive the results, but making sure they're all on the same page. All of those things, they're happy to feel comfortably uncomfortable, which we all have to if you're pushing livestock returns. And the other thing is they understand that going from a system of opulence, for want of a better term, where we've got fat cattle, good-looking pastures. We never have fat cattle, good-looking pastures and good profits because that's not the way it works. It's all about compromise. So they're prepared to give away some of the good-looking stuff to get the good-looking stuff that really matters, which is, you know, the financial return. And that is my summary of the mix of the attributes and the things that matter in terms of those people that really drive the performance out of their business.
It's really interesting in that list, and I think it's fascinating what you've listed there. You know, that's when we talk about management or leadership of a business, those are the things that we talk about. And I would argue that farming is a far more complex and highly risk business than a lot of the businesses we're going in. So the sophistication of decision making that we require to meet your sort of 5 points there is very high. And we always seem to underestimate that in our farmers.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. One of the things that I think is really interesting is when you assess, you know, drought management, and I think decision-making is a skill. And one of the things I've observed, again, do I have any data for this? I think you could – I actually put this up to a drought hub, and sadly they didn't think it was a good idea, but I think it's a really good idea. And that is taking all this data that we've got and actually overlaying some of the psychology and the decision-making framework that some good producers have. So my thesis is this, and that is that the highest profit farmers, certainly in livestock businesses, and that's sort of, I guess, my area of strength, so that's what I'm talking about at the moment, they tend to be always pushing high levels of productivity, which means you're always on the edge. And if you're always on the edge, that means that you've always got to make hard decisions. So when they come to a drought, it's just another hard decision that they've got to make. And it tends not to have the same impact that it does to a lot of other people because they're never on the edge or they're on the edge infrequently. So what you have is this cohort who are consistently making hard decisions because they're always optimising feed utilisation. So in the last 3 years where we've had lots of feed, nothing's changed. They've just got a lot more animals to optimise the feed utilisation. When it's a drought, they're doing the same thing. So they're always on the edge, whereas the others tend to leave a lot on the table in those non-drought years or very good rainfall years and say, we'll set that up and we'll give back to the system and all the rest of it, but that's actually opportunity cost. And then when they get to this point of having to make a hard decision, they tend not to because they get decision paralysis or they're not used to doing it because they haven't built the skill in hard decision-making. Now, that's my thesis. You can shoot holes in it left, right and centre, but I do think there's something to it and I'd love to prove it, but obviously need a bit of help from some social psychologist or someone like that. So if you know someone there, Dave, let me know.
Mate, as you say, I'd make a good PhD or master's or something.
That's it.
And the reason I say that too is I know in my own experience when we went, you know, when things got tough, I think you get more systematic in your decision making. I know with me it was being very forward, not forward thinking because that's not a thing, but making decisions and making the decisions while we still had an option to make the decision. So if we were coming to spring and we had no rain on this date, bang, we did X, Y, and Z. And it was funny, after doing that, we had 2 years which we had, you know, for Western District, it was a dry spring. I found decision-making easier, if that makes sense, because I'd gone through a couple of hard years where we actually did push it, but we got through it.
But that puts you in control as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've actually gone from a position of feeling uncomfortable to a position where I now feel in control because I've got a plan. Now, it mightn't be the best plan, and it mightn't be this is the other thing I think you've got to understand is there's a difference between the decision and the outcome. And a lot of people beat themselves up because the outcome went against them. But the outcome's the chance part. The decision part, which is you doing the planning and really thinking about probability and the consequence, is the bit you've got in your control. And you went through all those things to drive your destiny. That meant there was a lower probability of the outcome being bad. So you're sort of weighting things in your favour by going through that planning process.
But I tell you what, the feedback I got from the neighbours driving up and down the main road looking in our paddock saying, you know, it was just, that was the hard part, mate. Peer group pressure is not good.
Yeah, well, the other interesting thing about droughts is, I think, is that people move from a position of underutilising feed to a position of optimising feed in those dry times. Now, if only they took that good knowledge that they expend when things get bad and applied it to the good years, then that's what drives the resilience in a system. A lot of people are saying, oh, we need a case study for this, that, and the other thing. My view is, you know, building resilience in your business is what drives the returns over the long term. So a small proportion of years have the majority of profits. And so if you can take that knowledge that you've actually learnt in those dry years about feed utilisation and the fact that you can actually drive the system to optimise feed utilisation, and then you apply it to the good years, then what you actually build is this high profits in the good years that carry you through those you know, hard times.
I remember in one of those years going doing a pasture test, and it took me 3 hours to get a bag full because I couldn't find any, and taking it to the people and say, listen, when you finish with it, could I have it back? but okay, here's my problem. That was 4 years ago, John, and so what I've found is, and I've had some pretty good seasons since, what I've found is that I've slid. And that's why I've got you on. I need you to get me focused again, and then thinking about if we are going to get focused on making our business, as you say, resilient, what are the core things that as a manager that we can, you know, that we need to focus on? You know, there's a lot of things that are nice to have. But what I want to do is almost like a boot camp. Okay, these are the four or five things that if you really want to get in control of your business, these are the things that you need to focus on.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with cost of production. In fact, I don't have to go any further than cost of production, to be perfectly honest. So to drive a low cost of production, you need plenty of production and a sensible cost structure. Okay, now I'm going to talk you through an example of how a few key performance indicators or just production metrics in your business can assist you in times like this. So the first point I want to make is you're not the only one to have let things slip. And this is typical when prices go up. People get a bit complacent, they let go of the reins a bit and the horse bolts a little bit, and up goes the cost structure. You're still maintaining a reasonable margin, but that reasonable margin is only a function really of prices. So that's where we've been. Now that prices have come back, what we've got is no margin because we've let the reins go a bit. Now we're tightening up the reins, and let's go about sort of giving you an example about how we might do that. So the first thing I like to do is if we just take a few key performance indicators. Now, this is why I think assessing your farm business and production performance is absolutely critical. Now, we do it by benchmarking, but you don't have to benchmark. You can do this yourself. You've got to know how to do it and how to calculate production on farm and how, you know, to divide it by the hectares or the DSEs or whatever your metrics are. But it's really important, in my view, for taking control of your business. Why? Because it gives you some of those accountability measures. So there's the financial accountability measures, but there's also the production metrics that and the two talk to each other. So let's think about, I don't know, a 650 mil rainfall area, and let's talk about a beef business. And I'm going to talk you through how we can set some targets to deliver a low cost of production. Why am I doing that? Because price is out of your control. Assuming you accept that you are a commodity producer, and I think, you know, we are. Now, not everyone is, I accept that, and some people do the non-commodity bit well and others do it poorly. But if you accept that we're sort of the equivalent of the, you know, the coal producer in the mining world, which is effectively what commodity production agriculture is about, then the only way you've got to fight low prices is with a low cost of production. So to that extent, you're no different to the coal miner. They fight low prices with low cost of production. So we've got a 650 mil rainfall area, and I like to break that in 100 mil increments. So in a 650 mil rainfall zone, we've got 6.5 100 mil increments, okay? Now, I know that a really good production target for one of those 100 mil increments in a reasonable, in a rainfall zone like 650 mils or thereabouts should be around 50 kilograms of live weight of beef per hectare per 100 mils of rainfall. So if I multiply that 50 kilos of live weight per hectare per 100 mils, multiply that by the 6.5 increments in the 650 mils, I get 325 kilograms per hectare live weight of beef that should be my target on farm. So immediately I have a production target that I can aspire to. Now, the next step I can go through is to think about my production system. And typically what we do is turn things into dry sheep equivalents. Now, a dry sheep equivalent is just a measurement of consumption of energy. That's all it is. And so one dry sheep equivalent consumes approximately 8.4 megajoules of metabolizable energy. That's all that we need to know. We don't need to know the detail, any more detail than that, except that we want to, you know, utilize 50% of our feed. And so, you know, that per hectare target is really important. And going back to something we said at the start, or maybe we didn't say it, but 90% of our asset base is tied up in the land or the hectares we run, not the heads on the hectares. We've got this cohort of people that look to drive a return out of the heads on the hectare, but they only account for 10% of the total value of assets. So I'm looking to generate a return from the total asset base, not just the proportion of that asset base that sits at, you know, 90%, not 10%. Does that make sense, Dad?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And again, I would imagine that, I mean, I can increase my profitability per beast, but that's not going to, by running less beasts, but that's not going to cover my fixed costs, or it's not going to make a profitable business, I would have thought.
Absolutely, that's right. So we've got this target of 325 kilos of live weight per hectare in a beef breeding system. And this is specific to breeding. And now I overlay my target per dry sheep equivalent. Now, the other beauty of benchmarking data or looking at lots of data sets is that I know from a good production system, and I'm talking about a spring calving feeder type production system, so turning off feeder steers at around 450 kilos per head, that I will generate about 21 kilos of live weight per dry sheep equivalent. Okay. So if I divide that 325 kilos of production per hectare by 21 kilos of live weight per DSE, I get a stocking rate of 15.5 DSEs per hectare. Now, what's that tell me? Tells me probably what my optimum stocking rate should be to deliver that production target, roughly.
Yep.
So now we've got those numbers, let's talk about target costs of production. And I think at the moment, what we've got is a very low proportion of producers with a cost of production under $1.50. But I think that's where the target should be. Why? So when prices go low, like they did this year, steers got to, you know, under $2 a kilo. And that means heifers and cows are going to be under $1.50 or thereabouts, which means the weighted average across the herd might be as low as $1.75 per kilo of beef. Yeah. And you want to maintain some sort of level of margin. Now, if you can go lower than $1.50, I'm happy to, but I'm putting in what I think is a reasonable target.
Okay, so what goes into that cost of production? What are the, are we talking interest? Are we talking fixed costs? Are we talking variable costs? How do we make up that $1.50?
No, it's not a lot of the things you've just talked about. It is just operating costs. So when I'm talking operating costs, I'm talking about enterprise costs, which are the costs directly associated with the growing of the beef in this case. So they're animal health and breeding costs, they're selling costs, they're, which have got out of control. They're things like supplementary feed costs, those sorts of costs, freight, all of those costs are directly associated with the growing of the livestock. Beyond that, we also have overhead costs. Now, they're the costs of doing business. They're things like administrative costs. They're things like wages, insurance, rates and rents, motor vehicle costs, all those sorts of things are lumped up into our costs of doing business. So the sum of those operation costs are the costs that go into the cost of production. So I think what you're alluding to, and I think this is a fair point, is that there's additional costs beyond operating costs that we need to account for. But let's just stick with our operating costs being part of that cost of production, okay? So we've got our $1.50 is our target. Immediately, we've got something to work with because we know that we're producing 21 kilos per DSE and we've got a target of $1.50 per kilo of live weight. That gives me target expenditure of $31.50 per dry sheep equivalent. And if you wanted to turn that into a cow-calf unit, it's roughly between 19 and 20 DSEs equates to one cow plus follower in that feeder type system. It'll be less in a weaner type system, but stick with me. So we've got 80% of our costs in a beef system roughly account for overhead. So if we multiply 80% by $31.50, we get roughly $25. And then if we've put the balance in enterprise costs, it gives us $6.50 per DSE or dry sheep equivalent to spend on enterprise costs, which is sup feed, animal health, and that sort of thing. We've now got a cost structure we can work to. And if you want to know how much that is per cow or cow and follower, multiply that $31.50 by 20, and it should give us an amount that we've got to spend on operational stuff within the business. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So just going back over it, so what we're saying is per DSE, we've got how much money we're making. And so what's our cost structure again, sorry?
Our cost structure is $31.50 for every dry sheep equivalent, yep, which is $25 roughly in overhead costs,
yep,
and then $6.50 or thereabouts in enterprise costs. So that adds up to the $31.50. If you were to multiply that by 20, equals that by 20. I've got to use a spreadsheet because I'm not quick enough anymore. That's $630 per cow plus follower that we can invest, and that will give us a target cost of production of $1.50 a kilo, assuming you're utilising all your feed, so this is important, and assuming you've got a good production system. So getting back to one of the points that I think you made earlier, which was tell me about some of the attributes of the top performers. In a beef breeding business, one of their attributes, I said, was they understood the importance of systems. A system that calves in spring in southern Australia and that turns off livestock before feed quality declines, which is around a weight of 450 kilos as a feeder type system, is a feature of those most highly profitable producers. They're the ones producing 21 kilos of beef per DSE. They're the ones producing around 325 kilos per hectare in a 650 mil rainfall zone. And so all I'm trying to do is join the dots between that production type stuff and the operating performance of the business. Now, I haven't gone near price because it's out of your control.
Yeah, yeah.
If the price gets down to $2 a kilo averaged across the herd, you've made only 50 cents across the herd for every kilo you've produced.
Yep.
Now, that's not great, but once the price goes to $5, guess what? You're making a lot more for every kilo that you produce. So I'm just trying to show you what goes into that disciplined approach and how anyone can take this approach towards driving a low cost of production. Now, the important part here is optimizing feed utilization and producing as much as possible. Why is that important? Because a lot of our costs are actually in the overhead part. As I said, 80% of our cost base is in the overhead structure. So the more you run with that same overhead cost structure, the more you actually dilute your cost of production or drive it lower, which is part of the key in actually delivering this output. So at no point have I said, don't spend anything. At every point, I've focused on the production driving a low cost of production rather than the cost base. And this is important, David, because I was watching something on ABC Landline and they talked about this producer with a system that I sort of challenges my beliefs, talked strongly about his cost of production, but the interviewer didn't ask the right question, which was, do you have a lot of production that goes with that cost of production? Because a low cost of production without lots of production is a low profit system. You've got to have both to actually deliver high levels of profit.
And I think this is a really crucial point. I just want to take a step back and let you have a breath, mate, because we've gone through a bit. But this concept is that if you look at a agricultural production system versus a manufacturing business, and this is something that I learned from a really interesting guy, Professor Michael Bogier from Purdue University, was that this concept that a lot of our costs are actually in overheads versus a manufacturing operation where a lot of the costs are in variable costs. You can ask, so what? And the issue is that you can't get yourself out of financial trouble, if I can put it that way, by reducing production in a farming operation, because all you're doing is you're not getting rid of that cost. Now, in a manufacturing operation, you can, because most of your costs are in a variable things, and as you wind out production and put it in mothball, well, then you're getting rid of most of your costs. So fundamentally, we can't actually make money in Australian agriculture by going for a low production option. If you do that, your business is not going to be able to fund itself and then actually find you money as a owner of that business, because you're swallowing it up in overheads. And so it's a really important thing that we focus on this concept around land values being the 90% of our base and overheads being 80% of our costs. Now, put those two together, to me, it seems obvious that we need production. And you don't get production without spending money. So as a banker, people often say, well, you're coming, you're going to tell me not to spend money on fertilizer and you're not telling me money to improve my production. I'm going, absolutely not. I'm going to tell you to spend more money on that stuff and increase your stocking rates. And here's why. This is what the numbers are saying. Now, let's look at your overheads. Now, can we actually reduce them in some shape, form, or manner if they're not actually driving dollars at the bottom line? So I think whatever people take about it, whatever system that we're looking at, whether it's sheep, whether it's cattle, whether it's cropping, whether it's cotton, this common denominator I find comes across all the enterprises that I've come across.
Yeah, that's right. The only thing I will pick you up on there is that 80% of the asset base is unique to beef. Once we move into the sheep enterprises, because you've got a shear sheep, it punches more of that cost. But we're still talking 50-50 or 60-40. We're not talking 10 at the overhead level and 90 at the operating or enterprise cost level. So your principle still applies. It's just the weighting. In fact, it's why, in a beef system, it lends itself so much to driving production, because for every additional unit of production, you drive down cost by a greater proportion relative to a sheep business or a wool business sort of thing.
So, mate, listen, hopefully we've made the point about overheads. So, again, have you found like when you go onto a property and you're sitting down with a new client or you're looking at a new client and you're going through their numbers, is there some areas that you usually look at and go, this is where I'll go to find where there might be some cost issues? So again, what would be your take homes there?
Yes. So the starting point is looking at the numbers and working out whether the problem, if there is one, is on the income side. And income, I'm talking gross profit, which is sales less purchases plus inventory change. And some businesses have a problem there, which might be production related, or it might be an issue with that particular year, or it could be it's not enough sales, could be all those things, or too many purchases. Beyond that, we go to the cost side. And then I'll be looking at, what is it about this cost structure that makes it higher relative to those that drive a low cost of production? And typically the first thing I'll notice is that it'll be overheads. Where production is low, it'll be the overhead cost structure, which is typically higher relative to that cohort of really good producers. And then if I scratch the surface even further, I'll look at labour and labour-related expenses. And the reason I'm looking at those, so this is getting back directly to your question, the reason I'm looking at those is because they make up around 50% of the overhead cost structure. And so those, when I'm talking labour and labour-related expenses, I'm really talking about wages, owner imputed wages. So if you don't pay yourself a salary, we will impute one for you, which is about $120,000 to reflect the skills that you got in the business. It'll be contracting costs. And then when I'm talking about labour-related costs, for every labour unit you've got there, you've got a motor vehicle, you've got fuel, you've got depreciation, you've got all those sorts of things. So they're the labour-related costs. So those are the costs that tend to be the ones that you can do something about immediately. And so one of the things you can do is that if you don't have the scale to run, the number of livestock that you are, is go and work somewhere else. So work for a portion of off farm. Or the other is, build the scale. But it's not a good reason to build your scale. You have to have a good business case. It's not just labour efficiency and driving, I'm going to spend $10 million in a new farm because I need to improve my scale. There's got to be a better business case just than that. Now, the only other thing I wanted to say quickly, because I think you raised a really good point about production, I want to give you an example of a producer that I was speaking to recently, and he's gone through a growth phase. And And so he's facing very high interest costs and he's got relatively low production. And I gave some recommendations on what I thought had to come out of the business to really drive improvements in profitability. And he said, oh, look, I think that's too aggressive for me. And I said, well, sadly, I think you've got two choices. One is, given the level of debt in your business, one choice is, you know, to get rid of the debt that you've got in the business and to liquidate. Or the other is to pursue the path that I'm recommending, because you don't get choice when you've leveraged yourself and commodity prices go south. You actually have to drive production to have enough cash in the business to repay the interest costs and repay the debt as well. So discretion becomes a thing of the past where commodity prices fall. You might want to run a low stocking rate, sadly, or I don't like to term it like that. I mean, I prefer to say you might want to run low levels of feed utilisation. Stocking rate's an output of feed utilisation. But you don't get that choice anymore because you chose to grow, you chose to take on the debt. Sadly, your only way of dealing with the increased pressure in this business is to actually drive production within the business, which, as you said, actually requires greater investment. I've now got to spend more to have more livestock to drive the additional production out of the business to drive a lower cost base.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. To me, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that when I talk about agriculture and maybe, again, commodity business, maybe we should say, is that we've got to be really careful when people are comparing us to other industries because our cost structures are different. So you've got to start from that fundamental perspective when you're making financial decisions. What works in a production or manufacturing operation ain't going to work in agriculture or a commodity industry. And I think that's important. Now, John, I'm conscious of time and we could probably talk about this for hours, which we have in the past. What's your takeaway? What's your takeaway for people who are sitting there at the moment thinking about, okay, it's coming up to the end of the year, we're selling our commodities and we're about to sit down and have a really good hard think about next year?
Yeah, I think my takeaway is back to the books. We've had this period of slackness in our system. It's gone. It is now time to start being disciplined again. It is now time to invest in the business, not on the operational side, not on the bits that get your boots dirty and that sort of thing. It's time to spend time going back to the books, working out what your strategy and tactics are going to be to drive a low cost of production for at least the next 12 months, because everyone's speculating on this being a blip for 12 months. If they're wrong, and you say, well, I'm just going to ride it out, then there's a lot at stake. So my view is don't wait to work out whether they're right or wrong. Just drive a low cost of production in your business, which means go back to the basics. Start looking at the things in your business that you can do which are really about driving more production. So that could be more mouths. That's the easiest one. That's just increasing feed utilisation. That could be more fertiliser amounts, which would be the second order of priority. That could be more seed fertiliser amounts. But it should be done in that order because your highest return on investment will just be more mouths. Your next highest return on investment will be fertiliser and more mouths. Your lowest in order of those three return on investment typically will be seed, fertiliser amounts because you're spending more. Now, it does depend on the marginal return from those, but people jump to putting in more seed and fertiliser and then don't even put the mouths on, so they've actually got a negative return out of that. I'm saying be disciplined about your expenditure. That's really, I guess, be disciplined about your expenditure. Spend it in a way that's going to generate you more production at a lower cost for every additional kilo you produce and get back to those books. And if you need help, reach out to any number of the you know, thousands of organisations that can help you.
John, I think that was terrifically well put. I certainly will be going back to my books, and I might have to give you a call later on. But thank you very much for today. It's been a really great, another pleasure and insightful thinking about what we're going to do to re-look at our businesses. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's Marcus Oldham College Ag Talk podcast. Please, any feedback on the series would be greatly appreciated. You can either leave a message on the site or email me at cornish@marcusoldham.vic.edu.au. Stay tuned as we continue to explore issues affecting Australian agribusiness.